Coming up on this week's Rigcast.
The regulator will be there at a certain moment asking them for the details, and they don't have it, and then they are in big trouble. At the end of the day, you can't point to the AI machine if the regulator asks you how did you comply with my regulation. You can't point to the AI machine saying, well, because the AI machine told me so. That doesn't work. You remain responsible.
There's a way of processing and feed handling in this industry. It just doesn't work for eggs. And a lot of it's just because the public sector doesn't have the same mindset in terms of information. So you find lots of knowledge gaps, and that's why this thing's set on that spreadsheet and someone else's email, and it's not all in one place. So, you know, the system has to account for that and let everybody have this golden source that they can trust.
My rule to sleep better at night, I really needed to have a solution in place that would really cover the process from beginning to end. So from having the applicable regulations in scope to having the internal documents, policies, etc., and to show your, or to evidence your compliance. You cannot afford any weak links in your organization. In terms of compliance, you will be measured at a global level by a regulator.
Be careful that you really go for a simplified solution, which is transparent. Maybe it serves only 80%, but it serves 80% correctly, and then you get your service against the right price.
And then as we get more expert organizations, more law firms, more consultancies, a lot of the big four playing into this space, I think that will really help shape how do you bring multiple brains to the problem and solve it in many, many discrete blocks, but on the same backbone, same message, same data set. And I think that's what gets us to that common control library that we're all looking for. How do I digitize compliance and make it part of my business? So it's actually not just a efficiency driver, which of course it is, take, you know, lots of people's time down, a lot of them focus on some value add, but it can actually lead to revenue. And that's a lot better than all the fines.
Welcome to Rigcast.
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 Where we shine a light on banking digitization.
Hello, welcome. It's PJ DiGiammarino, CEO and founder of JWG, and welcome back to Rigcast. Really excited today to have a great panel following up on all of the discussions that we've been having here in preparation for our conference at the end of the year. We haven't spent much time talking about how we've been doing the research and what it takes to get all the data required for effective controls that we spent so much time talking about on Rigcast 13. To do this, what I'm going to do is put Karina, our trusty COO, in the chair to help drive so that I can participate, because JWG provides a whole bunch of data to a lot of great partners, and one of them is ING. And we also have ING Spark team here today with us to talk about how to do that. Karina.
Many thanks. So we have three guests today. I think the best thing to do would be to introduce ourselves. PJ said, I'm the COO. I'm going to be the voice from the background. So, Nick, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, my name is Nick Dalis. Thank you for having me. I started the Spark initiative at ING about 4 years ago, out of an understanding that we have to do the regulatory compliance process better. We received many feedback from regulators, internal, external, that we did not do well. In the meantime, all people were working really hard, so it wasn't about the people not willing to do anything about it. It was the process, it was the background. Again, we had to rethink how we can do better, and that resulted in Spark, and which is an end-to-end platform supporting you in your regulatory compliance process.
Thank you, Nick. Peter.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me again on this webcast. So I'm Peter Vissers. I'm part of the Spark team that is part of ING. Before joining Spark, roughly I think close to 2 years ago now, I used to be in the ING International Network, working in a total of 9 different countries. My last role was their country manager in Brazil. And in that role, I was obviously the one interacting with the local regulator a lot. And in that sense, really had a local regulatory change management challenge. So you could say that I went from being a problem owner to a solution provider by joining Spark.
Fantastic. And PJ.
So I founded JWG 15 years ago because I saw an opportunity to get the industry to a more collaborative space around compliance. And along that journey, that we realized that there's just so many different languages out there, people talking about the same thing or slightly different things in different languages, that when you're in a joint working group environment, you're trying to align them, it's hard. So we saw it from a multi-firm perspective, all that Nick just described, and we said, hey, let's do something about this. So 2009, when the Pittsburgh Summit kicked off, we said, all right, let's take the plans and work out what we do about it. And that became the beginnings of our data feed story, which has been now in production and in the revenue mode since 2015.
Many thanks. So let's kick off the RegCast. What do reg tech control solutions do? Nick, what problems do financial institutions have with controls every day? And who has what pain points?
Yeah, what you usually see, I mean, in large organizations is that from a problem point of view is that people are working in silos. They are reinventing the wheel every time. There is no standardized way of working. There is a limited governance. There is no single source of truth. You have many data sources like mail, like Word, like even file cabinets. There is hardly any audit trail. And so what you see thereafter, if a project is initiated to digest a piece of regulation, after 2 years, when someone asks about it, has to be reinitiated again. So there is no focus on the end-to-end embedding of regulations into the organization. And as a matter of fact, you have two types of organizations. Because this way of working, this is the status quo. And why is it the status quo? Because yeah, it was there because of it all of a sudden is there. And what you see now is that sometimes regulators come in and they say, hey, where's your audit trail? What did you do 2 years ago with my regulation? Can you show me how it is implemented and that kind of stuff? And those type of organizations, they come to the they've realized that they have to do something on their regulatory compliance by digitizing it, by going into a digital transformation, doing things on a different way, adding value in a different way. You also have the other customers, the other organization, who are still fine with Word and Excel and mail and different governances, different processes. But what you see there is that there is no one giving them feedback. So it's a big unknown, but that big unknown is coming towards them because the issue, the regulator will be there at a certain moment asking them for the details and they don't have it. And then they are in big, big trouble.
Thank you, Nick. Peter, as a former business risk owner, what's impressed you the most about these new RegTech tools and what impact do they have?
Well, Karina, it's actually an interesting question. And with all due respect, it's almost like, well, what impressed me the most or the least? And I'm going to, well, some of the points that Nico already mentioned, and especially what he kind of closed his statement with. At some point, you know that the regulator is going to ask you questions. So you need to be prepared. And in my former role, as mentioned, as country manager in Brazil, I really needed to be certain that we had all regulations in scope and that we were assessing them in terms of their applicability and also defining actions that needed to be taken to ensure that we were going to comply with them. But also very importantly, I needed to make sure that all the teams were aligned and collaborating and working together along that way, that same path towards regulatory compliance, to make sure that we were regulatory compliant, we had the required regulations translated or converted into internal policies. But we also need to be clear that we knew exactly who had approved what in the whole process, because that's the type of question that a regulator will challenge you, or they will challenge you, well, why didn't you cover this part of the regulation, or etc. So I needed to be sure that process was, that decision-making process could be tracked, and that we knew exactly who had approved what. And my really experience was when we were looking at solutions at the time was that there were a lot of providers and some of them were really good, but they just provided a part of that overall challenge that I just described that we were facing at the time. And I soon realized that in my role to sleep better at night, I really needed to have a solution in place that would really cover the process from beginning to end. So from having the applicable regulations in scope to having the internal documents, policies, etc., and to show your or to evidence your compliance. But also more importantly, it, not just that, but also that the teams were working together and that we could move away from spreadsheets, etc. And that was really my conclusion, that whatever solution we were looking at just provided that partial solution and not the end-to-end solution that was needed.
Thank you, Peter. An important question. Sometimes we debate a lot at JWG. PJ, what's so hard about tracking the regulatory impact on controls?
It is, and I really enjoyed the way David Silverman talked about it on our last Redcast 13. He said, look, we made a lot of progress in each of the silos that has to deal with regulation, but we haven't really joined them up very well. We need a system. And I think that's really the problem with tracking regulation. There's no system for it. From a business point of view, any regulator can throw anything on any part of their website in any format at any time of the day. And there's no common way to pick that up. And it's not very unnatural for the markets. The markets is all about standards and messages, right? So we all think about, okay, you're going to send me a payment, I'll send you a confirmation, or send me an order, or I'll send you, there's a way of processing and feed handling in this industry. It just doesn't work for regs. And a lot of it's just because the public sector doesn't have the same mindset in terms of information. So you find lots of knowledge gaps, and that's why this thing's set on that spreadsheet and someone else's email, and it's not all in one place. So, the system has to account for that and let everybody have this golden source that they can trust. And ultimately, if they can have a trusted solution, they can find stuff and they can know that they get the message and that they take the appropriate action. So for us, we look at a very systemic perspective. Over 10 years, we've gotten very, very detailed in terms of how we describe what we need to know in order to make that system work.
Thank you, PJ. I can imagine our entire team nodding furiously at those comments. So in summary, there are many parts that need to be joined up here. So we need to discuss, what are the components of the Holy Grail end-to-end? PJ, how does JWG solve the horizon scanning data problem?
Well, like with any problem, you got to start with a plan. And the challenge with so much regulatory noise is just trying to filter it into what you think the key themes are. But we've been getting better at that since 2009, when we literally sat in the middle of a riot in London for the G20 Pittsburgh summit preparation in April that year. And we went and looked at the document they were preparing. There were 92 action points that they were hitting the industry with, everything from AML to liquidity risk management to trading. And there was nothing that they didn't want to touch. And we said, oh my God, we're going to need a way to break this down across all of the regulators and think about what kind of language they're pulling that together. So we need to get out in front of that. And we think we've done a great job understanding and modeling, literally 600-700 different legislative initiatives right now, and building one common set of taxonomies, or what we call an ontology, to be able to manage that at scale and at speed. Because you can't rely on people, local knowledge, to be able to read everything. You've got to be able to deliver it to the point of use within a day. And that's this whole enrichment process and the ability to get really high trust, high fidelity, quality data fast to the point of consumption, and then maintain it so you got an audit trail of what's out there and everyone knows what's going on.
Nick, so what's required to stitch all those pieces together for end users?
Well, first of all, you have to understand the flow. You have to understand the status quo. You have to design together with the users where it all starts, what has to be done, and where it all ends. And so don't go to systems first. Think about the design. Think about the plan. And that's the first thing. Secondly, is that you have to think about an easy to deploy and a scalable solution. if you enter into that solution phase, you have to think about how can links be maintained between regulations and all the steps in between, and ultimately the control, because that's what it all is about. And you don't want the user to copy paste manually link, because that gives all kinds of errors and that doesn't bring you anywhere. You want to have a system that supports you in creating those links, so that evidence or that link is always available, and also that a user understands, someone in operations understand where that control is coming from. But it's not someone just thinking it up in risk just to make her or his life terrible. No, it's really something we have to comply with, and that improves the quality of the execution of the control, and as such, the level of control of the organization. Quickly configuration is key. You have to configure, because you can't ask people to work in a way your system is designed. Because the system, the people themselves design how they want to work. So your system has to follow the users, and that will help. And you should also understand that it's an illusion that, for instance, an horizon scanning process is done similarly over the globe in a large financial institution. They all have particular requirements, particular data feeds, steps in between, local obligations, and that kind of stuff. So you have to adapt to that, and still bringing it all together. And fortunately, we are living in a time that SaaS or PaaS solutions are easy to make available, and that helps you in scaling up. And last but not least, we should not forget the human element. The human element is always the key part in the process. And that human element has to be supported by other humans as well, who understand the solution. And that's where it all comes together.
Peter, what does this mean to a firm's governance and the way of working?
Well, I fully agree with what Nick just mentioned, Corina. I do think, though, that as a global organization, you do need to have a certain structure and standards and work methodologies that will make everyone talk the same language and work towards the same objective, and creating that single source of truth while leaving behind the era of spreadsheets, Word documents, email exchange, and to have that all in one tool and one solution. And I do think that is something where, in a core application, you need to be able to apply that across your global organization. Because let's be fair, you know, you cannot afford any weak links in your organization. In terms of compliance, you will be measured at a global level by a regulator. And but that said, and that's something that Nick was referring to or alluding to already as well, you know, in order to achieve that global compliance status, as an organization, you don't want to find yourself having to adapt to a tool. You know, you need a tool that adapts to you. It provides a solution, but it's still configurable and customizable, so that it can address within that global standard that you're setting. It is still flexible enough to address the local processes that you have in your organization. And I think that's really what is required to ultimately have that global compliance status in large global organizations.
I'm so glad you said that, Peter. I mean, it makes me think about this black box problem that we were talking about in the last broadcast. I mean, there's so much you can do with AI. What's the limit for people in terms of what you can expect the machine to tell you from a compliance point of view? What's the tolerance for safety there in your view?
Well, I think, PJ, I fully agree with you, but that's a very tough one to put a kind of a number to. And I also think, you know, you need to work with AI, or you need to make AI work for you, but you shouldn't rely on it, because in the end, ultimately, you need to apply your expert knowledge, expertise in the process as well. So I think that's key. So I find it difficult to put a number there, but you need to make it work for you. That's what I would say.
You just made our analysts smile. It's about linking the regulations back to controls in the language of the users. So what we need to look at is, what do firms have to do right to deliver RegTech controls? Nick, what technical pitfalls should be avoided?
What definitely should be avoided is that you have to start thinking about the problem and then the solution, and don't buy all of a sudden all kind of platforms, systems, that kind of stuff, because a system will not solve your problem. You have to solve your problem together by me with the support of a platform or a system. Otherwise, you will run into to very large disappointments, and nothing will work. And that's then you get all those things where people are forced to work in a way they don't want to, and that's not going to happen. They will not use it anymore. And like was introduced by Peter and PJ already, AI should not be overplayed. I mean, you see it everywhere. AI is this, AI is that. No, AI can help you in doing your work by taking away the painstaking and dull repetitive elements. You have to, and that will help you to focus more on the content, and that, and you can bring your work on a higher level. That's the only thing about the AI thing, and nothing more, nothing less. And at the end of the day, you can't point to the AI machine. If a regulator asks you, how did you comply with my regulation? You can't point to the AI machine saying, well, because the AI machine told me so. That doesn't work. You remain responsible. And everything you make, you have to think of that everything that you make available in terms of tooling has to solve something. It's really a statistics show that 80% of time is spent on over-engineering of hardly required modules in applications. So that is something, eh? So there is a lot of noise in all those applications which are not being used, and there's a lot of money spent on. And that has to be, you have to be careful that you really go for a simplified solution which is transparent. Maybe it serves only 80%, but it serves 80% correctly, and then you get your service against the right price. Another thing, already told before, explained before, do not start in the middle. Avoid point solutions. If you have the end-to-end process and you put a point solution in the middle, it will put the workload or all the confusion to the left-hand side or to the right-hand side. It doesn't solve you end-to-end. You have to have a platform or system in place which helps you from an end-to-end point of view. And think about implementation as well. What we often see is that people define a policy document or a procedure document or whatever you call it, and they literally throw it over the wall and expect it to be implemented by the first line of defense, the operations people. That doesn't work. You have to control it because you have to have the evidence in place. Implementation is also part of the end-to-end regulatory compliance process. So I would focus on these kind of things, and I think then that will help you definitely.
Thank you, Nick. Peter, can you tell us about your experience in winning over key stakeholders?
That's an interesting question, Corinne. I would say, you know, stakeholders, decision makers. The first thing is that you really understand their problem. Like, what is their regulatory challenge? And then by providing a solution that covers that regulatory change management challenge really as a process end to end, and that is deliverable, that delivers, and it was mentioned before, that is also scalable and can provide a solution, a standard across a global organization that provides efficiency gains while actually increasing effectiveness in the process, but also that can be customized and really meet the user's governance and processes. But, you know, all this is important, but what I think is just equally as important is that actually it's a solution that makes things simple, you know, that users like working with it, that it's user friendly in that sense. If it doesn't work that way, you're not going to achieve any of the other objectives. So I think that's really key in the process as well. So yeah, my experience is, or my impression is, that by winning over stakeholders, you provide a tool that provides an end-to-end solution and really enables users to deliver in an easy but still structured way that is scalable.
Thank you, PJ. Can you tell us about JWG's experience in deploying semantic controls for regulatory reporting?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess we know, as I said, we have to kind of eat our own dog food because we use all this data ourselves. And you know, we started as working groups, getting lots of people to say what they thought traded on a trading menu meant, or trying to work out how the interpretation of of execution timestamp at an international level differs from the way it's applied in a mere refit versus the CFTC rewrite. You know, you really got to capture the very detailed SME knowledge to understand why their perspectives differ in order to align this stuff. Nobody writes this stuff hoping it will all fit together. It's written from a perspective of, I've got to make something work in my jurisdiction. And it's the job of all the smart people in the banks that have to try to pull this stuff together. And so I guess what I would say is, you know, you need to have those humans in the loop at the point of interpretation to feed back into what it is the problem sets that you think you're solving. So it's an evolving process, right? You know, we've got 5,000 terms in our ontology now. We probably started with less than 1,000, but as we've gone into each of these problems, we've modeled them and expanded it in a way that keeps it all together and is a framework for people. And that's what people need from a scalability standpoint. They don't want to start with all of it. They want to solve a set of problems today. And I think the part of the key here is to, you know, take care of the immediate problem, but then give them something that they can use going forward. And hopefully that's the kind of partnership we put in place with the NG Spark team. That's the kind of thing we can deliver. Because you want to be able to analyze this stuff once and roll it out many times. And that's the trick to getting everybody on a level playing field.
Great. And finally, I'd like to ask each of you, what's your biggest RegTech control takeaway from 2021? And how will it shape the journey into 2022?
What I've learned from the 2021 definitions and learnings so far is that I've already touched on it, that implementation is a very important element, and not seeing as such at the moment, and it will definitely change in the near future. If I talk to large consultancy firms on presentations, and if I explain them that we have an implementation module just to monitor the implementation of product policies and procedures, and that it will make a huge difference, they say, yeah, this is absolutely an amazing unique selling point. You can see that now in Germany as well, where implementation, control of implementation is a legal requirement even. So you have to have that sorted to enter those international markets.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, Corina, I would say my main takeaways is end-to-end solution for your regulatory change management. That's the way to go. And as an addition, we mentioned it before, don't over-rely on artificial intelligence. You'll still need to apply your expert knowledge within your organization in the whole process.
And finally, PJ.
Well, look, I echo everything that Nick and Peter said. But I guess from my perspective, I'm really, really pleased to see the progress that ING has made with Spark. And the fact that it's being adopted, and to me that's a sign that, you know, the needs are finally being recognized, and that the supply is beginning to balance with demand and for RegTech tooling like this in certain organizations. I think there will be a shakeout in the market. I think there are some certain approaches that are starting to be proven not to work, and there are others that are seeming to fit the bill. And then as we get more expert organizations, more law firms, more consultancies, a lot of the big four playing into this space, I think that will really help shape how do you bring multiple brains to the problem and solve it in many, many discrete blocks, but on the same backbone, same message, same data set. And I think that's what gets us to that common control library that we're all looking for. And you know, one of the big motivators and the themes we'll talk about at our conference a lot is there's a real business opportunity from this stuff now. You know, it's not just, you know, is my AML under control? It's what about my crypto policy? You know, how am I dealing on that market for this asset class and proving that I'm compliant for it? And how do I pass that along as a token? How do I digitize compliance and make it part of my business? So it's actually not just a efficiency driver, which of course it is. It'll take, you know, lots of people's time down, a lot of them focus on some value add, but it can actually lead to revenue. And that's a lot better than all the fines that you know, that alluded to earlier, that, you know, the the skilled person reviews, the Section 166s, the reporting fines, you know, into the, you know, tens, if not hundreds of millions, the cease and desist order that, you know, one big bank in the US is under, you know, those are all signs of people not wanting to adopt this approach that, you know, is possible, but takes a big commitment to change. And we're not there yet. We're 2022, we're not there yet, but I think we're starting to turn a corner. So
before we end, just one final comment. If you haven't registered for the conference, please do contact me or press the button on this mailer. Whatever I've sent you via email, we're about to send the logins.
Thank you, Karina. Thanks for all your hard help. And thank you to Nick and Peter for coming to help make this a really clear and snappy conversation.
You can go to our conference website, which is regtechconference.co.uk, or go to the JWG website, which is jwg-it.eu.
This is Redcast,
where we shine a light on banking digitization.